in the hereafter. This person, first it begins with death, and then finally terminates at a person's entrance into paradise or his descent into the hellfire, right? There's different places where a person is stopped. Certain things happen. He's asked about his actions, or, you know, he's asked to, you know, make up for something that he might have done. So one of these places is the bridge. This is a bridge which is stretched out over hell, and a person is asked to walk over it. You know, it's famous that it's been narrated as being a person will pass either very quickly over it, or it may take eternity. In any case, another place in which a person will see the Commander of the Faithful is on this bridge, which in essence means that, you know, that he will come and help a person at this time, at this very difficult time. And finally, at the heavenly waters, meaning the fountain of Kosar, where, you know, the people, when they enter paradise, they are given from this fountain to drink. And it's been narrated that Imam Ali alayhi salam is the cupbearer of that fountain. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the love of the Prophet and his household and its effects on a person's fate in the hereafter, in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay.
Doing us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, as the Zionist regime continues its genocide, the United States promises it more weapons and its continued support. This was said by the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, who is in the Israeli entity and meeting with the War Cabinet. But as the American Zionist genocide continues, so does the resistance inside of the occupied Palestinian territories and beyond. I'd like to welcome my guests to this program to help me look at all of this. Anthony Hall, professor of globalization, Lethbridge University, out of Lethbridge. And Gilbert Doctorow, independent international affairs analyst, out of Brussels. Thank you both for being with me. Well, let me start this off with Anthony. Why do you think Austin has gone to Israel again at this time?
Well, who can really know? I'm sure there's so much going on underneath the radar. But what we see is a full-fledged assurance that the U.S. is behind this assault on Gaza, that the weaponry will continue, that the link between these two countries, which are almost now emerged country under a higher polity called Zionism, that this will continue. And of course, he wants to get some kind of Arab unity to fight the, let's call them Yemenis, not the Houthis anymore. They do control a country called Yemen. And of all the Arab countries, they are the most courageous. They are the most unstinting in showing support. And of course, this is going to embarrass other Arab countries that aren't showing anywhere that level of commitment, putting lives on the line to save the menaced people in the Gaza Strip. So we can talk about all kinds of underpinnings and context. That's my reading of it initially.
Okay. Well, Gilbert, and based on what the Americans are saying and doing, isn't this genocide as American as it is Israeli?
Well, yes, it certainly is. And I think that is appreciated by the Global South, not only by the immediate Muslim neighbors of Palestine. The United States has lost face internationally. The utter hypocrisy of everything the United States has said about the Russian-Ukraine war being so horrible and so murderous, that has all been wiped away by a different order of magnitude of violence, destruction, and ethnic cleansing that Israel has been practicing with American support ever since October 7th. So that is one thing. The other thing to mention is that within the United States, the complicity and the active participation, actually, of United States military in support of Israel's devastating activities in Gaza, that is something that has affected the broad public, and particularly young people. How long this can go on really depends on factors outside of the region. It depends on the political determinations within Washington, whether Biden's plans to be reelected next year are being totally destroyed by the disaffection of young people and young Democrats with respect to this war. And so America is a very big factor in the war's possible continuation or ending, whatever the Defense Minister Austin says. And there is more to it than meets the eye. If this Israeli offensive stops in its tracks, it also could be caused by something that's happened in the last several days, which is a minor thing, one would think, but considering the scale of devastation and death that Israel has wrought, the outrage in the neighboring countries, and the shock that is felt by even in the least tender-hearted countries of the West, when they watch on BBC or CNN or Euronews what Israel is perpetrating in Gaza, there is shock and dismay. But all of these big picture issues may be nothing compared to what is happening or may yet happen within Israel over the murder of the three hostages who had somehow been freed, somehow come home, they thought, and were murdered by Israeli army. That has had a very big effect on the Israeli public. It has proven the utter falseness of Mr. Netanyahu's government when it declares that releasing the hostages is a priority. And I might add, it adds a different dimension to the Israeli activities. Yes, they are very regretful if they slaughtered their own, but it's still more important that they fired on people who had raised the white flag.
Right.
And that tells you something about the nature of this government, about the nature of the war ministry and the senior military of Israel.
Indeed it does. Stay with me, Gilbert. So let me get Anthony back in on this discussion. Well, Anthony, please. The Zionists released footage claiming that it had found a major tunnel of the resistance. However, the resistance said that they were too late with their discovery because that particular tunnel was the one used on October the 7th for the Al-Aqsa flood operation, and it's a very limited tunnel. Your thoughts on this overall, because on the one hand, they're trying to show that they have accomplished something. On the other hand, one could ask, well, first of all, why would a people need tunnels to begin with unless they're imprisoned?
These tunnels are something to behold. I remind myself that Ho Chi Minh, the North Vietnamese, had tunnels. How did they withstand that enormous bombardment, that carpet bombing? They had tunnels. And so Gaza, the Hamas, has dug tunnels. wonder what the history of that digging is. And this is a very strong card. This changes everything, really. And I think the Israelis are sort of demonstrating they really don't know what's going on. And of course, the question now of the tunnels possibly drowning the hostages. Hamas has reported that 60 of them have been killed already, mostly in the bombardment. Now, this question of the United States and what is going on in the United States, think of the reality that in these forthcoming elections, so say Biden loses, and he will lose lots of support, but who are the contenders? The contender is Trump, who is, you know, tries to exceed all others in pledging allegiance to Israel and delivering Israel what it would like in terms of capital recognition, the capital, national capital, or the Golan Heights. And number three is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who represents a major alternative for the American voters. He's now going independent. But even he has this overwhelming commitment that he makes very clear to Israel, right or wrong, whatever. This has to underline for the U.S. public that their government is not really a democratic government when it comes to this issue. There are no major options being presented. Now we have three candidates, all the same. So this signals to people that this Zionist power is out of control, that it dominates the opposition parties or the alternative parties. And as far as hoping for elections we know are corrupt. And they used COVID as a means to throw the last election and mail-in ballots and all. And why would we expect this coming election to be any better? Now, this demonstration of what the Israeli military is all about, I think this firing at three Israeli, do we call them hostages? Obviously, they were freed, they'd escaped, whatever. But there they were, taking their clothes off, trying to demonstrate they have no weapons with the white flag, and they're shot by the IDF. And that is a demonstration not only for Israeli public opinion, but for the world, that this Israel fighting force, which is 100% backed by the United States, sort of created, the United States really created Israel. Britain created Israel as a outpost, as a colonial outpost for the West with the Suez Canal. And then after World War II, the U.S. took over this colonial project and developed, founding of Israel in 1948 began a genocide, which is continuing now, which is culminating now. So things are emerging that show the poverty of anything approaching the rule of law in the world right now, how deeply depraved our society as a whole, our global society, has become.
Yes, indeed. Well, Gilbert, what about the when we see the resistance, the Palestinian resistance? It is true that Israel is definitely killing a lot of kids, a lot of women, a lot of civilians in general, but they are really not crushing the resistance as that was their goal when going into that. I want to look at this and that even still, the resistance is still able to send rockets to the occupied Palestinian territories. I want to look at that side of things and how is that, how are they able to do that with all of the firepower that the Israeli regime has?
Well, it's admirable, but let's not get confused about who is who and what is what. That Hamas has stayed this far and has resisted and found ways to escape the awful onslaught of Israel, that's very, very good. However, that is not a victory. The damage that they have done to the IDF appears to be rather paltry compared to the damage that Israel has done to the Gaza Palestinians. 20,000 people dead. That is not offset by a missile here and there. that may have succeeded in getting through the Iron Dome and striking somewhere or other on an empty street in Israel. That is not war. That is simply an expression of anger. And it is, it's not going to resolve the conflict by Hamas having a few missiles to fire here and there. The question is, what else is the greater community in the Middle East prepared or able to do? And as we see, aside from a lot of jawboning and posturing, they haven't done much. Iran made the remarkable and very important proposal to impose an oil embargo on Israel, and even that did not pass in OPEC. And so the only economic war on Israel has been initiated in the last few days or weeks, precisely by the Houthis or Yemen in their missile strikes on container ships and in their boarding parties on other ships passing through the Red Sea. That is, to this point, the most effective way of getting the attention of the world and bringing to the attention of the world the economic cost that this war may bring, not just to the neighborhood, but to the whole world, if it doesn't turn into a regional and global kinetic war.
Well, Anthony, let's talk about the Yemenis, because actually today they stopped two more ships headed to the regime. Yemeni military spokesman said if Gaza does not receive the food and medicine it needs, all ships in the Red Sea bound for Israeli ports, regardless of their nationality, will become a target for our armed forces. I'd like to hear your thoughts about this and the effectiveness of not of what they're doing.
Well, the Yemenis stood up to a huge battering where the projectile at the front was Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia, of course, was backed up with U.S. weapons. This group within Yemen called the Houthis, we were referring to them as the Houthis, they have prevailed. And to my way of thinking, they have demonstrated right up to this point a tremendous commitment and determination to stand up against something intolerable. And it's really kind of interesting that the whole world, the only real example we have of a country, of a polity that will go beyond words and pronouncements and declarations and votes, that will actually take a stand, are the Yemenis in this situation. And so I cannot help but look at that as a heroic statement, a heroic stand that should send a signal now that, we are going deep now into this conflict. It seemed that with the firing on the three young Palestinian, three young Israeli men who had the white flag up, that there was a moment there that the domestic pressure on Netanyahu, that it seemed it was possible there would be some kind of ceasefire, some kind of truce, something to deal with the larger picture and establish a procedure. But with Lloyd Austin coming in the way that he did, a full-fledged, salesman for the military-industrial complex, having worked for all these arms agencies, which are making a killing on this, and he acts essentially like somebody who got in the job by affirmative action. He's really done nothing to demonstrate much thoughtfulness or leadership. And he's acted true to form as a delivery boy to the U.S. Israeli coalition to simply say, continue on. It's all right with us. We're with you. You were our project. Israel was our military outpost in the Middle East. You still fulfill that function. We're behind you. Biden is, all this talk about the political trouble he's in, but there's no alternative in the whole U.S. system to vote for anything other than this complete backing of the most extreme Israeli government we've ever seen. This is the most awesome, terrible spectacle I've seen in my lifetime of a kind of billboard genocide taking place with Al Jazeera and Press TV covering the nitty-gritties of it. It's amazing. I don't think the people in the power vacuum, in the little bubble of power, can understand how throughout the world, this is a symbol of the deep depth of the total, you know, monstrous consciousness of those who are so used to conducting power of life and death over the human population that somehow or other this is going to be expressed, and it's not going to find some expression in the United Nations, or it's got to be in the streets. Mm-hmm. It's got to be coalition building like we've never seen before on a global basis.
Okay.
And it's not always going to be polite.
All right, stay with me. Well, Gilbert, continuing to look at the resistance in general, I want to look now at Hezbollah, which started its attacks one day after the beginning of the Al-Aqsa flood offensive. Your assessment of what Hezbollah is doing, because they have opened up, of course, another front. The Israelis have to deal with the northern side of this, and of course the settler colonists who were near that border had to be evacuated. How costly do you think this is for the Israelis, this other front with Hezbollah?
Well, a moment ago we speak of the Houthis, who in Western press are all described as rebels. My fellow panelist has very correctly equated Houthis with Yemen as a state. So that's the same thing comes up with Hezbollah. It is presented as wild radicals. However, like Hamas also within Palestine, the leaders of these various movements have been some very sophisticated people. And so it is with Hezbollah, and they're doing their calculations. It was estimated that at the start of the conflict back in the early days of October, that Hezbollah has an arsenal of 100,000 missiles or more capable of overwhelming the Iron Dome and doing massive destruction in Israel. However, that would come at the cost of massive destruction to Lebanon, and that is pretty obvious. So the leaders in Hezbollah have made the point that we can do some serious damage if we really want to Israeli forces. They have pinned down perhaps a quarter of the Israeli army in the north towards the border. They have forced the evacuation of perhaps 50,000 Israeli settlers who were in residences near the border with Lebanon, but who are within reach, easy reach, of Hezbollah artillery, not to mention missiles. So they have made a point, but they have not gone too far. They have not gone beyond a certain red line, which would threaten a full-blown war with Israel, which they don't want, because it's going to be a very costly war, a costly war in lives and materiel, and better avoided. But that is true of Iran as well. It's true of all of the Middle East players. Nobody wants this to become a regional war. Nobody wants an escalation. And so all the actors are proceeding very cautiously. One thing to say on behalf of this caution is that if, for example, the neighbors or Iran had gone in at once and responded to the devastation, which Israel was already in the first days of its offensive wreaking in Gaza, then it would not have been clear to the world at large what the true face of the Israeli military is and their ambitions of ethnic cleansing. That would not have been clear. Now it's perfectly clear. If this should rise, if it should escalate to a regional war, the powers in the world, the world public opinion, is well informed of what the basic issues are and who is who. And that is something that only could have come about with a certain amount of indulgence and patience. We all are horrified that 20,000 Palestinians have lost their lives. And that still leaves 2,280,000 Palestinians who have not lost their lives. And that is has to be the objective of all reasonable people at this time, to do everything possible to stop this war in its tracks. And as I said, for political reasons, domestic the United States and all of American foreign policy is only a projection of domestic issues. It may well be that despite the big words of Mr. Austin, that the United States is privately counseling Israel, not the Netanyahu government, to stop this or else, the or else being a massive pressure on Israel as a whole to wisen up. They are behaving as if they're the United States. The United States has gotten away with murder, literally, on a massive scale for the last 25 years when it's played the role of the world's only superpower. Israel is not the world's only superpower, or second superpower, or third superpower, and however much support it gets to the United States, it cannot get away with murder. Okay. So I think that the restraint that's been shown until now has served a constructive purpose.
Okay, and on that note, thank you both for being with me on this Spotlight. Anthony Hall, Professor of Globalization, Lethbridge University, out of Lethbridge, and Gilbert Doctorow, Independent International Affairs Analyst, out of Brussels. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Back to Reality. Well, this is Asma, your host. Once again, I have the honor to be here at your service. And then here with us, we have two very dear guests, Sister Bita and Brother Hassanain. So as the ritual of this program goes, I would like you both to introduce yourself very much briefly. Let's just start with Sister Bita.
Wa alaikum assalam, my dear sister and my dear brother here at Back to Reality. I am Bita and I have the pleasure to be here again. And I'm studying medicine at one of the universities in Tehran. And that's it.
Thank you and wish you luck. And you, brother?
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having us. Hope everyone's doing well. I'm a student in the Islamic Seminary of Qom, and I'm doing my bachelor's.
So thank you, both of you, for being here. It's always a pleasure to sit here and have a discussion with you guys. So now, there are some different nations who have got so much of tolerance for other people's opposing ideas. Like, whenever I look at India, people in India have got this tolerance for different religions. Like, a lot of people are living at the same region, and then they are having a friendly relationship with each other. Like, even we have it in Arabic countries, some of the Arab countries, in some regions, you have Jew people, you have Christian people, and you have Muslim people. They marry, they interact with each other, they work with each other, they're having a very peaceful relationship. This is a thing which does not happen so normally and naturally because, you know, not all people whom we interact with have got the same tolerance for opposite ideas.
You know, I always thought like I have a really huge tolerance against all the people.
Yeah.
And I thought like I'm really patient and so on, but I'm not.
I used to think so, but then I figured out that I don't have it.
I understood it from the story that I had. I had a friend from one of the universities in Canada. She was an atheist. And always we had this discussion. It wasn't discussion, kind of dispute or something.
Yeah.
I recall it was
your
a fight.
Problem was that you were going through too much of discussion.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, sometimes I couldn't really bear what she was saying because it was even irrational. Okay.
Yeah.
I had a rationality out of mind and everything. And
but then she comes up with this point that how do you define rationality and irrationality?
Yeah, exactly. And she was like, "Okay, we have to respect each other.
Exactly.
You know, what does respect mean here?"
That's where the story ends.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I don't believe in this theory that unfortunately most of the people in this modern world have that we have to respect each other. No,
exactly.
Someone is stealing your wallet and you have to respect that?
Yeah.
No,
what
like
if
that.
A person is a serial killer?
Exactly.
Do you have to respect their ideas?
So I think we have to work on ourselves, first of all, and have our own rules, our own structures, our own beliefs. And when you have 100% certainty about whatever you believe in, then you have the knowledge and you have the authority to talk to other people.
So what about you, brother? Have you had such an experience?
Yeah, of course.
Have you tested your tolerance?
Yeah, of course. Like, you know, if you say that, you know, tolerance over here means like, you know, someone who is opposite to that of my beliefs, if I don't go and fight with them, yeah, of course, like, I don't do that. So I guess I'm quite tolerant in, you know, in this thing, in this matter.
So you, if you have an atheist friend, how would be your reaction?
So the thing is...
imagine just you're living in the same dorm.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, I come from a place where the people from different religions and different ideologies. So we all live in harmony. So everyone, you know, lives their own lives. Mm-hmm. You know, we hang out together. We study in the same school. And, you know, we live in harmony. So we
where does it come from? This harmony, where does it come from? I mean... Could we learn that? I mean, is it teachable to children?
If you are just living happily with someone with some, I don't know, some false ideas, you have to do something. It's your responsibility to do something.
No, see, sister, sometimes it's not the story of just getting deeper. Sometimes you have to because they are a part of your community. They're a part of your family. There are a new members added to your family. They are your friends. I just told you in dorms, we are suffering from that story. So it's not such a very far-fetched example. Sometimes you have to come to this harmony that another person has or entails some different ideas and perspective. I cannot change them. What should I do?
In this case, I believe that, you know, there are stages, like there are different stages for this thing. Like, first of all, you know, when, I guess not just me, to everyone, like, you know, when we are with the people who are opposite in our beliefs, like it might be anything, like regarding regarding politics, regarding religion, regarding any idea, when someone's opposite to our beliefs, so we, that makes us uncomfortable.
Yeah,
like be the friend, you
that's
know?
Natural.
Yeah, I believe in something, but my friend believes in the opposite,
the, so, you the know, total it makes reverse
you,
of that.
Yeah, it kind of makes you uncomfortable, so you wish that, oh, like, you know, I wish my friend would have the same beliefs as mine. But the thing is, when you talk about the beliefs, like, you know, this one belief and then there's the other belief in contrast to it, in the contrary. But the thing is, beliefs, like, apart from the taste, for example, I believe pizza to be good and you believe burger to be good.
Yeah.
So, like, this taste, like, you know, yeah. It's subjective.
No, it I believe on... both of them are good.
Yeah, so, all right, like, maybe... You believe Iranian food to be good. I believe yeah. Indian food to be good.
So
this thing, this matter of taste, right? So this mm-hmm. subjective. So let's keep this thing aside. But apart from that, like beliefs about something where there's no point that, you know, both of them to be right.
Yeah. So you mean in a deeper and in a larger scale, in a more important fact.
Yeah. Like, you know, things apart from the taste.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the belief in God. Someone says there's no God. And we say that there's Allah, there's God.
So the creeds. You
yeah,
totally
so
mean
over
the creed.
Here, over here, it doesn't make sense. Like, you know, oh, okay, he's right as well. He's right as well. No, there's one reality. Mm-hmm. So the one's true and one's false.
Yeah.
So the thing is, what we try to do is we try to, you know, get proofs for him. Like we try to prove him. And but at the end, it lies in his hands to accept it or not.
We'll be back in a heartbeat. Welcome back, dear listeners. Thank you for staying with us. Well, this is still Back to Reality, and we're talking about how much tolerance can I share with my society, with other people around me, and the communities that I enter as a stranger. That's really a question, you know, because sometimes, as you just said, I feel like, okay, I'm a tolerant person. I am so enlightened. I can tolerate other people's opposing ideas. But as soon as I get there in the situation, I feel like my brain is just simmering. I feel like my brain is just boiling, and I cannot control it. I cannot ignore what they're saying, because just as the brother mentioned, sometimes it's not the story of taste or anything like that. It's about ideology, and ideologies, there's no way for all of them to be true.
When we talk about beliefs and ideologies, so... beliefs in common, not just about the beliefs in like religion or God. Mm-hmm. Like beliefs in common regarding anything, regarding anything. When you talk about like these type of beliefs, not necessarily like our belief is correct, right? So we might be wrong as well.
Yeah.
So the thing is, but we like we have this habit, like we like the others to be on the same track as ours.
Yeah.
Like we like them to be on the same belief.
You know,
right?
I do believe in negotiations. You know, we as human beings, we can talk to each other. So we can talk as friends and then we can have a negotiation. But then just right at the moment when I feel there is no common sense between us, then I would cut the discussion forever.
You know what, sister? I think we have to ask her these important questions from ourselves, that why aren't you patient? Okay. And even when the time that you find the answer to this question, that why you aren't patient talking to people, negotiating to people, you can understand that how you can fix that. Okay. And when I ask myself why I'm not patient when I face opposing ideas, I find this answer, that I want to change people. Sometimes I want to change other people's taste. And this urge within me, which I want to change it
myself.
That's
very important.
It is really
dangerous. We
can't
change people.
Okay. If we cannot change people, and if you have that high temptation to change other people, then you will always be impatient. Okay.
Yeah.
And this is one problem. Putting that aside, sometimes you have to understand that you can keep silent. Okay, you mentioned the other part. I mean, talking and negotiating with people, and sometimes you can just keep it silent. Okay?
Yeah.
Just let it go.
Yeah, just ignore the differences and then keep up with the things that you have in common.
Exactly.
If you have to interact, because sometimes you can cut it from the very first point, but sometimes no. As I just said, so there are some inevitable moments that you have to keep going with other people that did not have the same ideas as yours. So in those situations, I do believe that it's best to create that toleration, to develop that toleration in yourself. So let's go for a short break and then we'll be back to wrap it all up.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
When we talk about beliefs and two opposite sides, so the two parties, right? Like the two opposite sides. So like two opposite beliefs. So of course, like one of them is right. So if you think your belief is right, so like first you can try it, as you mentioned, like you can try and negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a reasoning for it. Like, and you can get a reasoning and you can try to prove it. So the chances that, you know, the opposite party agrees, understands your reasoning and get to the same point as your belief. But sometimes, like, when this doesn't happen,
you can just ignore it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You can just feel like, okay, it's better for my mental health.
Yeah,
the
main
like
point over here, like, I want to mention over here in this two parties thing, is that, like, both the parties, like, both the opposite sides need to have this in mind. Like, okay, I might have an opposite belief than to yours. Okay, I respect your belief. And I do not want to hurt your sentiments.
I'm not going to violate your peace. You don't do the same thing to me.
Yeah. So this is what, you know, makes the matter worse.
Yeah, exactly. And we can take the Prophet's life as an example. And even if his grandsons, like Imam Hassan alayhi salam, had a difficult situation at his time, but he preferred to keep silent. Actually, his silence was not out of weakness. It was out of power because of the benefit of the entire society and Islam on the whole. You know, we should actually, I sometimes say we prioritize our purposes. Sometimes for a greater purpose, you have to forget about your own difficulties with the opposing ideas.
Exactly.
You have to tolerate things and develop that in yourself. And as I just said, we can take the lives of our Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam as an example, as a role model. Like the Prophet himself had a lot of problem with the people of his society. But what he did he just fight with them, all of them? No, he started to treat them with kindness, and many of them we're just converted through kindness. So our religion is the religion of kindness. I guess through kindness, we can develop some sort of understanding and toleration of other people.
You know what, when it comes to society, we have to put the society's benefits first to our own individual benefits, mm-hmm. okay? Whatever our prophet, our infallibles did in the history, and we can take lessons from all those stories.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes you have to focus on the things that you have in common mm-hmm. rather than the things that are different.
Exactly. Sometimes these incongruities that happen among people are not as important as the thing they share as their common sense. Sometimes that ties us together is our nationality. Sometimes it is our religion. Sometimes it is our, educational purpose or whatever. But whatever it is, on a general scale, we have something in common that we can focus on that more and more. And as I just told you, when you're thinking of tolerating other people's idea as a difficult task, just remember that you are not right all the time as well. Some other people have been tolerating your ideas as well, so you can share that with your fellow people. And I don't think that's so difficult if you go for it and try for it and take an example of the lives of the great people, of the lives of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. We must tolerate each other as human beings. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again, let us see daylight again, once again.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavet, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A terrorist group files a lawsuit in a European country against an Iranian civilian. The country arrests the man and keeps him in total isolation on baseless allegations. This is the story of Hamid Nouri, who was illegally imprisoned by the Swedish government in 2019 because of a lawsuit that the terrorist Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization had filed against him. They accused him of involvement in the execution of the members of the group in Iran in the 1980s, an accusation that has not even been proved. Hamid Nouri is called the most isolated prisoner in the history of Sweden, as he has not even been able to meet with his family. In the meantime, Nargis Mohammadi, an Iranian woman who has been in and out of prison for committing various crimes against the Iranian nation and the country's Islamic establishment, has sent a letter to the Swedish government while in prison. She has thanked Sweden for putting Nouri on trial.
Sweden is a role model for freedom, democracy, and powerful civil society. Your country hosted one of the biggest symbols of justice for Iran in these years.
Mohammadi, who was awarded the Nobel Prize last week, has been criticized by Nouri's son as she has supported a terrorist group.
Nargis Mohammadi is a prisoner in Evin. She has written a letter to the Swedish Prime Minister. Her husband also met with the King of Sweden. She's trying to bolster my father's trial, but she knows well that she's actually helping us with her stupidity, and she's making it clear which is notorious, the Evin prison or Sweden. A stupid enemy is good for these times.
These developments coincide with the trial of MEK members in Tehran for killing more than 17,000 Iranian civilians. The proceedings are aimed at bringing the criminals and those who have supported them to justice. Farzana Shurgun, Tehran.
Another phase of the current catastrophe that the displaced Palestinians who are taking shelter in the yards of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir el-Balah City are going through is coping with the heavy rain that has hit the Gaza Strip. It just took less than 10 minutes for the tents, which are made of scraps of plastic or fabric, to be flooded completely with water, and for the land to be turned into swamps, obstructing the movement of people. The rainwater has at least half a meter deep and overwhelmed the people inside the tents, soaking all existing clothes and covers, albeit little.
This is my tent. It is made of plastic and has an area of 4 square meters. My family consists of 13 members. We all sleep inside this tent. After it rained, the tent was engulfed by half a meter of rainwater that soaked our clothes and blankets. Thus, we hug each other to warm the children. We will remain steadfast no matter what happened.
It was just a matter of a few seconds for the people here to realize that they are trapped between the hardship of having access to the basic humanitarian needs and the demolicious rainy weather. Civil defense crews, who are totally overwhelmed with attempts to recover bodies from the rubble of houses destroyed by Israeli strikes, rushed to help the people, despite the lack of needed equipment.
The people here are living in tents which were totally flooded with rainwater because these tents are not designed or prepared to endure this heavy rain. Despite the lack of the needed equipment, we managed to help the people using some primitive means. However, these tents need to be rehabilitated in order to provide protection against the harsh winter.
It's worth mentioning that at least 4,000 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, have been taking shelter at the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital since the Israeli forces launched a ground offensive in the northern part of the Gaza Strip and in Gaza City.
This is another dark side of this continuous suffering for the displaced Palestinians here in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. It is unfolding with the continuous heavy rain. The people here are living inside tents which are not designed or established to protect them from this kind of unprecedented situation. This is a continuation of the distress that the Palestinian people here are experiencing. Muti Abu Musabbeh, middle area of Gaza Strip.
Yemen's armed forces have announced successful attacks on military targets in occupied Palestine. According to a statement by Yemen's armed forces, the latest attack saw a large number of drones targeting military sites and installations in the occupied city of Rashrash, which Israel calls Eilat. The latest attacks come just one day after Yemen's armed forces once again targeted two Israeli ships in the Red Sea. The two ships were destined to unload shipments in the port of Rashrash.
The Yemeni armed forces, with the help of God Almighty, carried out military operation against sensitive targets in the Rashrash area in southern occupied Palestine with a large batch of drones. The Yemeni armed forces confirmed the continuation of their military operations against the Zionist entity until its aggression against our steadfast brothers in the Gaza Strip stops.
Over the past month, Yemen's naval and armed forces have captured or attacked several Israeli-bound ships in the Red Sea. The continuous Yemeni attacks have caused some shipping firms to pause Red Sea shipments and travel. Yemen says it will continue to target Israeli-linked or Israeli-bound ships until food and humanitarian aid enters Gaza.
The Yemeni armed forces would like to ensure that all ships and international shipments will be safe to travel to all ports except for Israeli ports. These ships must always keep their naval navigation system on. The Yemeni armed forces will not hesitate to target any ship that refuses to follow these instructions.
According to Israeli financial experts, the Israeli economy has suffered an approximated $4 billion in loss due to the Yemeni blockade on all Israeli shipments.
Israel has called on the U.S. to take military actions against Yemen in order to secure its shipments in the Red Sea. But after witnessing the military capabilities of Yemen's armed forces, neither Saudi Arabia nor the UAE or any other country dares to attack Yemen. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Turkish doctors, medical students, and healthcare workers gathered in Istanbul on Saturday for a silent march against the Israeli regime's attacks on hospitals and medical staff. The protesters lamented that the Palestinian health workers are struggling to save the lives of the victims of the attacks on Gaza amid lack of medical supplies, anesthesia and fuel due to the Israeli blockade on the strip.
We choose to march silently as medical professionals. We are doing this for 4 weeks. Inshallah, it will be fifth week in here. We are doing this in 36 different cities in Turkey and 26 different cities all around the world. For example, in London, in Chicago, Sydney, Kuala Lumpur, Paris, etc. We try to raise our voice against to targeting the healthcare professionals in Gaza, the targeting the hospitals, because as a doctor, our the first goal is primum non nocere, because do not harm to anyone. But in Gaza, the forces are targeting medical places directly, so we try to raise our voice against it.
The march was held in collaboration with the Healthcare Workers for Palestine, a collective of healthcare workers who stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people. It also held similar marches in 26 cities around the world. The march was also held in 36 cities in Turkey. Demonstrators wore lab coats with red handprints on them to highlight the plight of Gazans and the struggle of the region's healthcare.
Our job is about people's lives. We are trying to save the people's life, and Israel killed the people. And we are all against the killing of people. We are all against the genocide in Palestine. And we will be here until the genocide stops, and we won't stop talking about Palestine.
The protesters carried banners saying the targeting of hospitals and medical team is a war crime. So far, Israel has killed more than 280 medical workers, including doctors, and rendered many hospitals unusable in Gaza. I am a doctor, not a target. This is the slogan used by Turkish doctors and medical field workers, who gave assurance that they will press ahead with their protests until a ceasefire is reached. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Rome hosted a new conference on the Israeli occupation of Palestine. The initiative, dubbed How to Get Rid of a Population, was named after former professor of European contemporary history at the University of Turin, Diana Carminati's eponymous book. Carminati's thesis in her recently published book was that the basic dynamics at work in Palestine are the same as those in US, Canada, and Australia history. These three countries and Israel are all, quote, settler colonial nations, and their plan since the one of their invasion was to get rid of all the people already on the land.
In my book, I've tried to describe how invaders get rid of entire populations by examining facts and evidence that took place in a span of time from the 70s to today. The strategy that has been adopted so far aims at gradually mollifying the people who were already on the land with subsidies and other in-kind benefits. The invaders get rid of those people, or at least concentrate them into increasingly shrinking areas, such as the Gaza Strip.
Academics pointed out that through a false narrative of manipulation, Western governments and media had been trying to persuade the public opinion that the start date of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is October 7, 2023.
Perché si fa partire?
Why do they lie so blatantly? The abomination began at the start of the last century when UK-backed Zionists sent their settlers to Palestine. After killings of Palestinians and unrest in 1947, an abusive UN resolution called for the partition of Palestine into Arab and Jewish states. Had the Palestinians been asked if they intended to share their land?
During his tour of the West Asia to bolster the United States' influence in the region, White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan met the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia bin Salman on Wednesday to discuss the war in Gaza and future relations between Tel Aviv and Riyadh. Some experts believe that Israel's ongoing onslaught on Gaza has impacted the so-called Abraham Accords, putting it on hold. The genocide against Palestinians has pushed many to question the future of Arab countries' normalization of ties with Tel Aviv.
These accords were designed by the United States and Israel in an effort to create an anti-Iran bloc. I don't think this plan will succeed, also due to the role China is willing to play in the region. My take is that these accords won't go any further.
Also on Thursday, a protest by a group of pro-Palestine activists was held outside the headquarters of giant defense and aerospace group Leonardo in the Italian capital. Tens of people with banners and placards called on Leonardo to stop fueling a genocide in Gaza by providing weapons to Israel. Max Civili, Rome.
Amid Israel's relentless strikes on the Gaza Strip, many Afghans have gathered to show support for Palestinians. They vehemently denounced the Israeli regime's brutalities and showed their unwavering solidarity with Gaza. The demonstrators proudly brandished the flags of Palestine and displayed banners reading, "Down with Israel and down with USA."
This war is backed by the U.S. That's why it is still ongoing. Nowhere is safe in Gaza today. The Israelis bomb schools, they bomb buildings, they bomb hospitals with support from the U.S.
We have gathered here to call for the cessation of the oppression of the Palestinian nation. To stop the murder of women and children, all Muslims should unite and support Palestine. We are all willing to go to Gaza if made possible by our government.
While expressing their unwavering support for the Palestinian nation and their cause, the demonstrators also voiced their deep-seated frustration at the international community's failure in addressing this crisis and issued a stern condemnation of their inaction.
International organizations are just a tool to legalize horrible crimes committed by arrogant states. They have failed us in the case of Gaza, and this blood is on their hands too. We shouldn't expect such organizations to help, and we Muslims must take action.
Since October 7th, Israel has been committing genocide in Gaza. This demonstration is a ripple in the wave of protests that have taken place worldwide. They all chant the same message, that they stand united with Palestinians.
Through this gathering, Afghans are sending a strong message to the global community. They underline that they stand by Palestinians and support them in the fight for their rights and freedom amid Israeli occupation and onslaughts. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
The world's largest gathering dedicated to refugee issues. After 4 years holding its second meeting, bringing together member states, civil society, financial institutions, private companies, and more than 300 refugee advocates. An important participant, Iran. According to UNHCR data, as of mid-2023, the Islamic Republic has been the largest refugee-hosting country in the world.
There's no temporary solution to the refugee crisis. The UNHCR and the international community have to take serious measures for refugees to be able to go back home. The Islamic Republic of Iran has been hosting refugees for the longest time in history. Over the past 45 years, and even more recently since the developments in Afghanistan in 2021, my country is hosting the largest number of refugees in the world, providing them with health care services and education for their children, despite the fact that we are under harsh U.S. sanctions ourselves.
But while the protracted crises in places like Afghanistan, Myanmar, Syria, and Ukraine were discussed, the failure of the UN Security Council to confront the major human catastrophe in Gaza became the most important topic of the day, with a second meeting held on the sidelines of the Global Refugee Forum, focusing only on Gaza.
Women and children have